Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Thank you very much for coming. We're here today to hear about the IMC, and Mark will be leading you through description of the company, and I'll talk a little bit about the specific opportunity that flows through from that. If and when anyone is interested in taking a share of the company, there's lots of paperwork, a deed of adherence, and self-certifying for any investors as well, but that's something we can look at later. So I'd like to hand over to Mark, and then I'll pick up in a minute after that.
Thank you, Andrew. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Mark Stewart. I'm the CEO of IMC, UK company started in 2012. We have an extensive management team that has a lot of experience. I was staggered to actually see that we have 180 years between us, five masters, 13 bachelor degrees, and we can speak 14 languages, which is very important when you're an international business, which will become more evident as we move forward. Okay, so who are our customers? What do we do? Well, we're a telephone company, but we're a clever telephone company. We're an automated trading platform called Banker Telecom that enables automatic telecoms trading and settlements. Okay, so this is not an ordinary phone company, but these are the types of companies that are customers. And these phone companies, internationally, they're set up with Canada top right phone time, Japan top, sorry, top left phone time, top right, KDDI, Japan, New Zealand, bottom right. I've set up on this graph or slide geographically. But fundamentally, what do? They send calls between each other, SMS between each other, and then they have to pay each other. And that's the reason why we're in business, because we help them make calls, help them send SMS, and also help them sell, actually pay for those calls and SMSs. Okay, so a little brief history of the company. We launched Ecomo, which was a mobile phone calling app, short for Economical Mobile, Ecomo. Quite a good name we thought at the time. I still like it. Back in 2012 with a small EIS investment. We moved on, trademarked the company's brands, opened up a back office in India. And over time, we grew the revenue quite substantially. And then Andrew joined as chairman. And we got to have 500,000 retail customers, which was quite good. The end of 2015, the world changes. Bright idea, because what happened over the last years prior to this point was that we realized that the telecoms industry hadn't changed. It still relied on banks who are inefficient, slow, and quite often shut to actually make payments. And also, trades were still being done manually between friends as account managers between different companies. So at the end of 2015, we came up with the idea of Bank of Telecom, and we partnered with Western Union to help us fulfill that vision. And we launched the company and trade now as Bank of Telecom at the end of 2015. To help us implement the business plan, we then got licensed by HM Work and Pensions. So we were thought as visionary by our shareholders in June later that year when Brexit happened, was voted to happen, because basically we can hire international staff just like a hospital. Okay, so we can hire anyone from anywhere in the world based on their skill set and language capabilities in Chelmsford. So we have a tier two license as a phone company. Very, very, very unusual. Okay, going forward, revenue grew, partnered with Amex, similar to Western Union. We also got an LEI number, very important, that enables us now to trade using our payments partners, but with unlimited trade balance limits. So we can trade any amount of dollars per day. Simon Leary joined us, who was a PwC partner. We moved forward, revenue grew, contracts grew, new offices opened. Rachel was appointed from our Chinese team in Chelmsford, and then Ellen joined as well. And our revenue grew substantially, and we started in business in Chile as well. The main point, probably to stop there on actually on Chile, is that because we're international, we realized quickly that there was something we could do very easily that no one else had done, and that was to trade internationally in English, Spanish, Russian, and Chinese, which represented 90% of all business trade language. Okay, so you can still deal with IMC, Bank of Telecom, as a Chinese person or a Russian or a Spanish person. You can contract with us, you can trade in that language, and you can do all your business in your own language. You don't have to speak English. Major, major selling point, which was pretty obvious to me, but that's what we've done. We then moved on to Botcoin, which is a natural progression of the Bank of Telecom. And we'll come back to that later. And we went past 1,000 carriers, opened up in Malta, and trademarked the company branding in different countries. So currently, Bank of Telecom is trademarked in 32 countries, and Botcoin, very important, Botcoin is trademarked as well, which means that Bitcoin can never be trademarked without breaching our trademark. Earlier this year, I was ranked in the top 100 CEOs in telecoms, which is very nice. But we also won the global award for the best value-added services provider in the industry in May in Berlin. Other companies that won were Deutsche Telekom, Orange and Hutchison, and IMC won twice. So we're amongst very good company names. We then were named as a partner of the GLF. What's the GLF? Well, basically, it's an organization formed of the 30 largest phone companies. Each of those companies' CEOs sits on a board, and their purpose is to utilize blockchain to enable better communications for the world. And we were chosen as their partner for that initiative. 60 million revenue, so we're getting bigger. We then had also, we also have SMS clients, and we're up to 200 at this point. And then in September, we were ranked 23 in the TechTrack Sunday Times 100, which is a major achievement in itself. And our run rate's around 87, 90, 95 million, something like that, at the moment. Okay, so what do we actually do? Well, the numbers are quite big for a small, you know, for a private company here. We're talking about 60 million revenue. Why is that? Well, basically, the size of the market is huge. But what we actually do is we do two things. We're a fintech company. We provide an automated trading platform called Bank of Telecom, or platform as a service, to the SMS and voice market. So all the phone companies that send those SMSs and voice calls around the world, we provide a platform to do that automatically. We also have the world's first regulated international settlements company that uses blockchain to do the settlements, and that's a subsidiary in Malta. Okay, market sizes. The voice market is 2.4 trillion, roughly. It's very, very, very big. We have, out of 10,500 customers, about 1,124, when the slide was produced. And when you look at the market share, it's tiny, but it's still 60 million of revenue. So I'm trying to explain why the revenues are big. The actual market is huge. On the SMS side, we have 200 odd customers, and that's even smaller market share. And it's a smaller market, only $100 billion. Then our last market that we're in involves payments, international settlements, which for the telecoms industry alone is about $18 billion. So all the phone companies paying each other have to pay the banks $18 billion per annum to pay each other. Okay? So that's the three sort of markets that we're addressing. So what is actually Bank of Telecom? What does it do? Well, we mentioned it's an automated trading platform. This means that trades are done on merit, not because two account managers know each other and wants to give each other business, which currently happens in the market, which actually works mainly on a manual basis or relationship basis. We've automated the whole process. So from a Bank of Telecom point of view, we have bank aspects or USPs, and we have telecoms aspects, which are USPs. On the banking side, and this is us, you know, basically saying to the industry, use us, trust us, because banks are so hopeless for us as an international organization or industry. these are the reasons that we can help you. They're quite compelling. If you imagine a market where you can set the payment terms and the sales price yourself as a seller, you can automatically get paid in 2 hours in 132 currencies to 170 countries rather than 3 to 5 days, or not at all because it's Thanksgiving or a weekend or after cutoff. Okay, so this is basically a completely different world that we're offering. We're offering an international settlement service that's fast and always available, but also saves about 75% as well whilst you make those faster payments. And interestingly, you actually receive the capital sum, unlike using a bank. So if we pay $10,000 to Deutsche Telekom, they receive $10,000, not 9,990, whatever. All payments are confirmed by email, which is good, from Western Union on our behalf. And then on our customer side, all our customers are insured. So we have credit insurance on all our customers as well. So basically, there's lots of benefits here. But the main one that everyone forgets is that you don't now need, as a Bank of Telecom member, any money to trade. Because instead of having cash flow negative trade environments, you now have a cash flow neutral environment, which means you don't actually need physical cash anymore to do these trades, which all the phone companies do. So the finance managers and directors love us. Banks don't like us very much. On the telecom side, this gets very technical. I don't know if anyone here is a telecoms person, but basically what it enables a customer to do of Bank of Telecom is look at all the different prices. There's 200 or so countries in the world. Every country has a fixed line operator, 4 or 5 mobile operators. They all offer a price for every country in the world. So there's a massive matrix, if you can imagine, of pricing. And what our system does, it automatically collates all the prices from all the companies around the world, finds the cheapest 4 or 5, tests them, puts them on the market. Okay, so that's what we call the buy targets. Then the sellers basically post their deals, or routes rather, and that matches with the buy targets. And then when you get a match, you get a deal. When you get a deal, it's then tested. If it passes testing, it goes to production, and then it goes to trade. So this is an automatic trading platform for telecoms. And where it's different is that all the other trades are done without automation. So they're done between a salesperson, a rates department, a billing team, a finance team, an operations team, individuals within a phone company, all working on email and phone calls and Skype, trying to make deals happen, versus an automatic platform. So the benefits here are absolute. You could keep writing the benefits forever, but for example, you don't need, if you use us only as a phone company, you don't need a billing team, you don't need a collections department, you don't need a financial controller, because you're going to get paid on time, every time, immediately. So you're never going to have to chase any debts. You won't need to have a routing team in your network operations center. You won't need any salespeople. Just need somebody to enter the system and post routes. So you don't need any sales skills or anything like that. It all works based on merit, commercial merit. It also gives you access to the whole global market. We're connected to over 1,300 carriers. If you're a small phone company connected to 20 carriers, you log on, all of a sudden you've got the whole market in front of you. It's a complete game changer for small companies. And as I say, because we reverse bill our suppliers don't even have to invoice us. Okay, so they don't actually technically need a billing team. They just use our bills and receive the payments with them, those bills. So it's a really big change here. So we also have some other brands. All these brands are trademarks. And our main business is Bank of Telecom, which we mentioned is the automatic trading platform for voice and SMS for the carrier community. And also we have our international settlements business, which is the new business, which is blockchain-based international settlements using a token. Then we have some other standard sort of telco products and services. But the interesting thing is that because all of the value that we add is being, you know, now aware in the market of the value that we add, the actual uptake of customers is about 30 per month. So we do trade shows all around the world. We have 10 trade shows. We meet carriers. A lot of carriers will join when we meet them at a trade show. a lot of carriers just join because someone else has joined, or because of, you know, they see us on LinkedIn marketing or whatever. But fundamentally, about 30 carriers are joining every month, which is absolutely amazing. And they all have to pay a fee, $250 per annum. So we have a nice membership fee coming through. So when we started Bank Telecom, it was very, very late in 2015. We changed our model completely to the Bank of Telecom model, and then our revenues have grown from there as the big carriers came on. And as we raise funding, we deploy that immediately and get the cash to work to bring more revenue in on our insured customer base traffic. So it's an amazing growth story, but when in the context of a $2.4 trillion market, of which we've got, you know, 7 or 8% of, it's actually quite a little way to go here. We've made some profit. EBITDA is about 3 million last year. And I think what's really good is that we've now got market recognition in a massive way, and it's become mainstream, not just within the telecoms industry. I was grateful to be voted into the top 100 influencers for the telecoms industry earlier in the year. Then we were chosen by the GLF, which represents the 30 largest phone companies, as their technology partner for blockchain, which is really, really important. Obviously, recently, we were in the Sunday Times Tech Track as number 23 because of our performance and basically how we have performed over the last 2 or 3 years. Our team is small. There's 32 of us. There's a couple of people on holiday here when the photo was taken, but there's 32 of us, and they're all deployed. Chelmsford is a head office. We have our license to employ foreign nationals, so we have our two Chinese people. We have a Russian lawyer. We have lots of international staff. In Moldova, we have the Russian team. India is the back office network operations center that keeps it all going. Chile obviously does the LATAM market. So we're a small company, but we have a very diverse reach. What's our vision? Well, basically, we're going to get to £200 million of revenue in 2021-22. For our Bank of Telecom service. On the timeline, you would have seen the LEI number that gave us the unlimited transfer limits, which means that we can do a lot of transfers. We're going to go for 1 billion in the same year from a multi-subsidiary, which is basically based on blockchain. So we have a botcoin, which is pegged to the dollar, and we're using that model to carry transactions. We have no credit, no transaction limits. JP Morgan are doing $1.6 trillion a day. We're talking about doing $1 billion a year. It's not very much, but it sounds a lot. Revenues, quickly. Okay, last year, 60 million, 3 million EBITDA. Year to date, that's only July to October, 29 million and 1.5. We're heading for 118 this year and 7 million EBITDA. So we're doing quite well. And although we're lagging on the run rate, obviously we're growing. So every month we get closer, and we'll get there. We're also introducing SMS to our platform, which is going to come through. SMS has dramatically increased. I think you probably all notice you've got one-time passwords whenever you do anything online now. You have to do two-stage verification. That came in Europe in February. And in Europe on February the 1st this year, the number of SMSs in Europe doubled overnight. So it's absolutely, you know, Moore's law times two. It's incredible what's going on. Okay, so that was a very quick run through. Now I'm going to hand over to Andrew, who will give you the corporate overview and how you can get involved.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. That was a quick run through of the company. Obviously, we look forward to any questions you may have at the end. I'll just talk a little bit about the corporate side. So the ownership of the company. Thankfully, Mark and I still have more than half of the company, but we also have this group of angels who came in with us in March, April 2017, so 2.5 years ago. And their net cost to get in was about 7p a share. They paid 10p up front, with the tax effects, it was worked out at about 7p, and the current price is 80. Just to clarify from a financial point of view, the Bank of Telecom machine with 1,300 members is essentially allowing wholesale telco companies to trade with us, and we're the counterparty, and therefore we take a piece in the middle. Now, it might be twice a month, but the average amount we make is about 5% a month. Now, ideally, as you can work out, we should just borrow the money and not issue more shares, in theory. But we do both. This is some of the money we've borrowed, and this is therefore the piece that we keep for the company. And obviously what we keep, we roll over, but we also have a policy of paying 20% of net profit in dividend. Now, it's a contentious thing. We could argue about it for hours. Lots of people say if you're doing so well, you should keep the money. But the way we've set things up is that 20% of our net profit is paid out. The dividend this year should be 1p. Now, that's pretty good when you paid 7p. And hopefully the dividend, like everything else, doubles every year. We've had 5 years of doubling of revenue and of EBITDA year after year. The share price, as you'll see in a minute, has been doubling every year for 3 years. That brings up the question, naturally. How long can you possibly double every year? Well, if the whole addressable market is a football field, the piece of the market that we are today is this piece here. So given that the awards we've won and the level of high tech, the low staff, the lack of legacy systems is in place for us, we're a young company, we don't see any reason why we shouldn't be able to grow substantially within that market. Share price. Here's the history since the angels came in 2.5 years ago. We have borrowed money with warrants attached. So when the price was 10p, we said we would give people the chance to borrow at lend us money at 12%, but they'd also get warrants to buy shares at 16p, which at the time seemed like a fair deal. By the time we issued those shares to everyone, the price was 40. So they were very happy. We did the same thing again here, and that price is 80p for the end of next year. In the meantime, about twice a year, we do offer the opportunity for people to sell their shares and other people to buy in. And these would be the blue amounts that have gone through. The last lot was at 700,000 shares went through at 72 about a month ago, various buyers and sellers. Currently, these shares are offered at 80p. Mark mentioned the Sunday Times Hiscox Tech Tracker 100 index. It's been coming out for 19 years in a row now. These are some of the points on it. The fastest growing company there, 58 million of revenue, loss making. You would expect people to pop in here, companies to pop in here at a high growth rate, but probably losing money. It's not necessarily a bad thing. But we're here and we're making money, quite a lot of money. If you wanted to find a company with our revenue or more, you have to go out to number 46 in the rankings. So we're quite unusual in the sense that while we're fast growing, doubling every year, we're also quite solid in the sense that we have an established profitability. This is a note of what I said about the shares available, 3.4 million at 80p. About 40% of them are new shares. That's a 10.5 times multiple of last year's profit, EBITDA. And it's 4.5 times what we expect to make this year. Any questions?
I'm just going to ask you one question about the about what you just said about the trading, of the secondary trading of the shares. How are you doing that? Are you doing that on your own?
Yes.
Platform? Are you using a secondary platform provider to do that? So basically it's kind of ring you up and say, I'm interested in buying and...
No. We have a... I mentioned at the beginning, we have a deed of adherence, and part of that sets out the rules for buying and selling of secondary shares. Anyone who buys shares needs to check they're happy with the agreement and they sign it. Under that agreement, any shares that are offered by an existing shareholder need to be offered to the existing shareholders first. So you don't miss out on shares if, let's say, they're offered cheaply or something. Any new shares that are issued need to be offered to the existing shareholders. The only exception is where 75% of shareholders vote to avoid that rule, which would speed things up, and they might do that, and that requires 75% of all shareholders and also 50% of all the investor shareholders, the angels. Both of those conditions need to be met. So what happens is that we write to the shareholders, we say, there's someone offering shares. Does anyone else want to offer shares? You have a week or 10 days to offer any shares to add to that volume at that price. And then we say, these are how many shares are available. If anyone wants them, let us know. Now, if we have people who want to buy the shares who are not shareholders, we might offer the shareholders the opportunity to vote to waive the rights. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Typically, it's twice a year we do this. Yeah.
What's the deadline for new shareholders, for people that want to buy in?
Currently, it's the end of the year. But if the shares are all sold, then they'll be sold. Yeah, it's first come, first
served. To existing shareholders or
no,
just
now it's
first
at the moment it's open. Yeah, it's open.
So did the angels in 2017, was this already in place when they came on board? I mean, did they come on board knowing that they had a secondary market effectively on a twice yearly basis?
It's not fixed at twice yearly. It's just worked out at twice yearly. I think they knew that we would make efforts to match trades. Yes. But it's worked out that we've done it this way. So it's really a round of share trading twice a year. And they seem happy with that. The other thing about the angels, as you're probably familiar with that, they generally can't, the EIS investors generally can't sell for 3 years. So we have in mind that there'll be some shares may become available around about April or May next year from those people. But it's about 12% of the company. It's not enormous.
Would you plan to have a public quotation at some stage? Would you plan to have a public quotation at some stage?
We are often asked about the exit, and given that we have more than half of the company between us, we're quite interested in its value. But it may not be the way to go. We wouldn't exclude it. But we think that it's quite likely that we're a target for a trade sale to either a telco or a financial company, because we think we're unique and we have something which could be built upon very easily by someone who had a lot of capital, which we don't have. So we're growing more slowly, only twice a year, because of the lack of capital. A large company could leap forward by buying us. It could be a telco or a financial company. We haven't included Malta in our forecasts because we're nervous of doing that, because any realistic scenario looks very big, and yet we can't guarantee it, so we'd far rather over-deliver. We don't need to, because Banco Telecom is reliable.
Actually, just to add to that, we haven't actually spoken about IMC Malta at all in our figures. It doesn't appear. But if we can just set the scene for what IMC Malta is, bear in mind we've got this $2.4 trillion voice market, $100 billion SMS market, and this $18 billion payments market to pay these phone bills and SMS bills. So what we actually have today is 100% owned subsidiary in Malta under the guidance of the MFSA as the world's first international settlements company using blockchain. Sounds scary, but it isn't, because it's a closed user group of clients that are the Bank of Telecom clients. We have a partnership with Western Union, because if you think about it, it's not particularly useful having an international blockchain network if you can't actually pay any money into it or out from it. So Western Union are our FX partner, and we're operational, and we're about to launch, and it's going to only go one way. How you put a value on that? Gartner said to us, you have no competitors, no direct competitors. It's a real challenge, but it's very valuable. We just don't know how much it's worth.
Yeah, the reason it arose was that we found we were making over £100,000 on the difference between what we were charged for these payments and what we were charging the clients, and they were happy because they were paying three or four times less than they normally paid, and that's without the botcoin system. It's always worth a dollar. You can always buy a botcoin for a dollar. You can always trade it in for a dollar, more or less instantly. So there's no speculative capacity in the botcoin, and it's only within the closed group and their telcos. But it's about a quarter of all the telephone activity in the whole world are members of the system. So they want to pay each other. So what would happen is, and what does happen, we've already traded over $1 million of this. They send in $100,000. They get 100,000 botcoin. The money in the bank is always the same as the number of botcoins issued. We don't touch the money. And they can then use the botcoin to pay each other. And anyone who gets the botcoin can either use it to pay someone else They can keep it until they want to use it later, or they can get their money back. But it means that a third-party payment can be affected by us, and we charge them $10 per transaction, which is dramatically less than any other way. So it's instant, and it's very cheap. And because of our connection with the GLF, which are the biggest 30 companies in the world, there's obviously an overlap between the Bank of Telecom and the GLF, but it means that we cover an enormous part of the telco market. This could apply to other industries, but this is the one that we're in.
So basically, our payments take 5 seconds. We save 83.3%. That's an actual figure based on asking our customers. 610 replied to us what they paid on average for their bank wire fees, and it was $60 from, that was about 68 banks that they use. So we have an actual saving. We know what they're going to save is 83%. And obviously 5 seconds versus 5 days, it's a no-brainer. Also, with the fifth edition of the Anti-Money Laundering Directive, banks are now going to be under a lot of scrutiny on due diligence for KYC and AML. And with blockchain, it actually is a compliance officer's dream, because you have a immutable, which means a recorded transaction that's permanently recorded, can't be deleted or altered ever in one place between two parties, versus things that can be deleted that are on a series of transactions. Because when banks pay each other today, maybe 10 banks internationally might be involved in one transaction with MT103s linking them all together at different prices, different rate, bank cutoff. It's a nightmare, absolute nightmare. So blockchain is the way forward for international settlements. And the question I always get asked is, why wouldn't Lloyds Bank do this? And it's pretty obvious. Would they want to cut their revenues by 83.3%? They probably wouldn't. So it's going to be a new entrant like us, and we're the first, and no one else can get to where we are within 1 year. So we have 1 year advantage. So it's an amazing achievement. But how you value it is difficult to say.
So it's not in the figures.
And could you just talk about incorporation, where you're incorporated, accounts, and the board?
Sure. Okay. UK company, 3 100% owned subsidiaries, one in Chile, one in Moldova, one in Malta. Chile looks after the Latin Spanish-speaking market. Moldova looks after the Russian, former CIS states, Russian-speaking market. And Malta is our financial subsidiary. All accounts are up to date. We're just finishing off the audit of our current accounts this year.
30th of June, year end.
Yes, 30th of June. And we're all of our subsidiaries and the holding company are audited. So we've audited accounts already for Chile and so on.
Looking at Companies House, you only have filleted accounts. Why are there not full accounts for Topco?
Well, basically, last year we did 20 million revenue. So we didn't have our accounts audited this year. Edmund Carr, who have always been our accountants for the last 8 years, are doing our accounts and auditing them, which will be available.
We can send you the full accounts.
Last year's accounts were not audited?
No,
the 20 million ones weren't.
So the previous year, the year ended 30th of June this year, are being audited?
Yes.
Two questions, actually. So could you repeat the point you made about the SMS in February? I wasn't concentrating as much as I should have been.
Okay, European Commission introduced a law that meant if you make an online transaction in the area of finance, in insurance, banking, that involves logging in or payments, that you have to have a two-stage verification via an SMS. Mm-hmm. So on the last day of January, literally it was the last day when that didn't have to happen, and then on the 1st of February it happens, and the number of SMS in Europe doubled overnight. And there's going to be more and more security aspects using SMS going forward.
Okay. And then just on the financing, I mean, so obviously someone's been lending you some money. Can you tell us who's been lending you money?
Yes. We have borrowed from the shareholders, and that was the notes I mentioned, 12% per annum plus the 16p warrants. Then we did a new issue. That was 10% plus 80p warrants. We also borrowed from a private company called Credit Force, of which I was chairman until a year ago for about 4 years. It's a private company. And if we go back briefly here, just to answer your question fully. This piece of the ownership, which is 15%, but it's going down shortly to just under 10% for due diligence reasons, is the estate of Don Hansen, who's a very good friend of mine who died 5 years ago. And he was the first EIS investor into IMC. And he put in £150,000. And that shareholding is now worth about well over £3 million. So he did quite well. But he's no longer with us. And his estate is managed. Now, he has a private company, of which I was chairman, and that company has lent us about £2 million. So currently we're borrowing. We borrow from lots of people. We borrow from Lloyds Bank. And who else do we borrow from?
SpotCap, Funding Circle, shareholders, angel investors, obviously, and then many of them reinvested later on, or sold and then reinvested later on. Mixtures.
So, I mean, the ideal scenario for us is to borrow the money. Financially, we should borrow the money. We have a market cap of about £32 million, and we have debt of about £4 million. And we can make that 4% margin on the money, so per month. So we should really borrow the money if we can. So we like to borrow the money as a preference, and if we can issue shares, we can also do very well on that too. Yeah.
It sounds as though you expect eventually to be taken over. Is that expectation because you think that somebody might actually, if your blockchain system works, you think that an institution might actually want to take you over in order to, for example, challenge the SWIFT interbank transfer mechanism? Or might you start doing that, or might these telcos start doing that themselves? Because they are also beginning to challenge the transfer mechanism by having pay by phone transfers, in particularly in Africa. But where is your thinking on that broader aspect, not telcos, or rather perhaps telco clients, and just challenging SWIFT generally?
Well, the first thing to mention is that we're a business-to-business. Okay, so our customers are big phone companies. Anything that happens in the consumer area, retail consumer area involving payments, is, you know, good, but doesn't impact on our business. What it impacts on our business is who makes the international payments, the large international payments. The payments can be $5,000. They can be $500,000. The banks have an international department normally that does their international transfers, and lots of phone companies to date have used those banks and had to suffer the poor service, delays, high costs of transfers, and amazing scenarios such as India, which I always bring up, which is quite funny because 10% of all international trade payments go in and out of India, and India has 18 bank holidays a year, which means they're shut for a month a year. So 10% of the market shut for a month. You wouldn't have that in any other industry. So it's not very difficult to be better than that, but we are superbly better than that because we can do 5-second transfers for $10 with unlimited transfer value.
Wait, if I could add a couple of just extra points on that. In terms of Malta, the history, it's a very interesting situation. It's almost just good luck that we were there, really. I mean, perhaps it was very clever, but it was also a lot of good luck as well. Yeah, because... my understanding, this is slightly before I got involved personally, was that the Maltese government was lobbied to create some sort of regulation in order that the gambling business could move their roulette chips around and do stuff. And then, of course, they took it seriously, rightly, and they wanted it regulated and they had to do all these things. And we got involved because we could see the opportunity to capitalize on our vast volumes of these telco payments that we couldn't ourselves do because they're third-party payments. So it's accidental in a way. However, once they started going through all the due diligence, know your client, nightmare, just appalling amounts of paperwork, a lot, if not all, of those online casinos dropped off for all sorts of reasons. So we're left in a situation where there's really no one else who's actually gone all the way through the process to get to where we are in Malta, which is the only government that has actually put all that stuff through that they wouldn't have done for us. So it's a sort of a lucky situation in a real country part of the EU and so forth. And the other thing I would mention is that we've talked about lots of models and we can't talk about anything firm, partly because it's not been agreed in detail. But there are various models whereby our relationship with the GLF, which does represent the biggest telcos, and we are their partner for this already, could turn into something where we might end up with a much smaller share of something much more valuable. Because we can't carry this thing indefinitely and make the best of it that it could be made into. So someone else is going to have to pick it up in the next year or two. And I think it's probably going to be telcos and or possibly financial.
Mark, Andrew, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.